accession number 28361, reel 40.
General Julian Thompson, Reel 40.
The philosophy was that the aim is to learn plenty of lessons. Yeah. And if you hadn't had at least two or three good cock-ups in the exercise, then you hadn't learnt anything. Mm. I think the whole object was to learn, not to be to try and prove how clever you were.
Who were you aiming at in particular? Were you focusing your attention at any particular level within the...
I was really aiming my lessons at COs and company commanders, actually. I was trying to teach lessons to COs and company commanders. I wasn't trying to teach people how to do section attacks. I was worried about making certain that COs ran their units and fought their units properly. Mm. And that meant the company commanders had to be in the picture because they might actually end up being the CEO anyway, apart from anything else.
Mm. So the shocks are really coming at sort of level.
At company level and CEO, yeah. Mm.
What about the people playing enemy? Were there any shocks built into it for them, or were they...
Not really, because I was trying to teach certain lessons. I was rather... structuring the enemy to do things that would bring out the lessons I wanted taught. Mm. So though the enemy CEOs were given some latitude, there were certain things that I wanted them to do. How they did it tended to be left to them to a degree, but coming back to the business of playing the enemy, I for example, wanted the armoured squadron to advance en masse, as if there was another armoured squadron behind them and another one behind them, and not to sort of advance as if they were a British armoured squadron.
Which would be one troop forward.
Exactly. I wanted the whole lot up in the shop window. Mm. And when they said, oh, we'll never do that, I said, no, forget that. You're Russians. You're expendable. Behind you, there are 30 more like you.
Echelon back.
And when you're wiped out, they'll just come in over your bodies. Mm. And so exactly the same way with the commander. I made them attack three up. Mm. I mean, when they were attacking us, I mean. Not when we were attacking them.
Yes.
We did it our way. But they... So when this lot were hit by the enemy, the whole lot was laid out, and it just came at them. And I said, remember, you're also under the most massive artillery bombardment, so your heads are not above the parapet watching this lot.
How long did that take, that big exercise?
I suppose it was about 5 days. Mm. It was a sort of Monday through to Friday job. Mm.
Did you find that the company and battalion commanders did perform according to your expectation, or did you have any surprises as a result of this system of shock?
The CO of the chap who lost a lot of his chaps, I was jolly glad I didn't have to take him to war. Mm. He'd been a company commander of mine before, and he was a bit of a prima donna. And if things didn't go his way, he tended to throw his teddies out of the playpen. And certainly I'm glad I didn't have to take him to war. So that exercise, in fact I didn't have to, as it happened, because he was in the normal course of events, he wasn't the CO.
Mm.
but it proved to me that he was someone who would be liable to crack under pressure.
Mm. What about the others? Did they?
The others were okay.
They reacted.
And some of them, I particularly wanted to test out this coming command, because I thought he'd do well, and he did.
Mm.
At the end.
What are the outward and visible signs then in a company commander or a battalion commander that they're likely to be able to withstand the shock of the unexpected? And
well, they're not thrown by it, and they don't sort of rush around like a headless chicken, and they're not sort of whinging all the time, saying, "Oh, I can't do it because I haven't got all the right bits." There's this chap who gets petulant is a chap who needs watching, I think. You might get petulant at the wrong time.
Mm. But it seems rather strange that they managed to get through the rather rigorous training that you get in the Marines.
Yeah, well, they do get through.
They'd have got petulant, earlier on and been spotted.
Well, they do, I think. I think that perhaps they've been allowed to get away with it, allowances have been made for them, or perhaps they've never been put under that sort of pressure, which is a sort of collective pressure. Because it carries with it the responsibility, not just for yourself, but for a whole stack of other people. And curiously enough, I'd suspected this chap of being like this. And I'd actually, in my opinion, made a mistake in putting him in charge of the company at harking back to when I was a CEO, the company at Cross Maglen, because he actually was beginning to crack under pressure there.
How did that show? Was that just in his manner? And
it was just that he tended to sort of fly off at in auto without really thinking too hard. And it only in retrospect that I realised it. Mm. Actually.
Well, a lot of people are attracted to the military life because, to a very considerable extent, for excellent reasons, it is predictable, and it has to be predictable.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
And to be able to adapt to a predictable life on the one hand, and then the extreme unpredictability of being on campaign and in battle on the other, is not a common characteristic.
No, yeah. And so, that's true. And some people can't make the transition.
So what happened after that? You had your
brigade exercise,
creative thinking.
Creative thinking exercise. I'm just trying to remember now what the next few months were, because the next big event, of course, was the Falklands War.
Yes.
But in between that, I'm just trying to remember whether we did any more exercises or not. I have a feeling we didn't. I went and visited one of the commandos in Northern Ireland, I remember, and spent a few days with them in Belfast, 4-5 commando. And then we were planning and doing recces for our next winter deployment.
Was that going to be Norway again?
Norway, which was, in fact, very sadly limited by lack of funds. And this is where the Knot defence review was beginning to bite. And as a result, there was not enough money for the whole brigade to go, and I had to make a decision as to how we played it. We could either send... There was enough money to send one commando complete, plus a little bit more. So what I decided to do was to send that commando complete.
Yeah.
And then all the novices from the whole brigade would go and train at various locations in Norway. The Dutch were not affected by this, by the way, because the Dutch money came from their own government,
their own
so they went as well. So we had the Dutch battalion there, plus 42 commando, complete, plus a battery. And so all the novices were sent over en masse to do the 3-week novice training. So at the end of the winter, I'd have a brigade that was had no novices in it, if you see what I mean.
Mm. Everyone would be trained up individually.
Everyone would be trained up individually. That was the best we could achieve with the limited money available. And I spent a lot of my time in Norway that winter visiting all the various training that they were doing. I also did a lot of recces of actual wartime tasks in Norway, from south to north. I took a planning team with me, and we looked at all the various options, which there were, and the number of options. There were North Norway, Mid Norway, South Norway, Denmark. I went there. I looked at the Danish option and all the various Danish islands. And so it was a period of recces, planning and preparation for the next winter. Mm. And I also recced the next exercise we're going to do on Salisbury Plain, which was going to be a different exercise. We were going to be attacking. And so it was quite a busy time, but I don't think we did any collective training. First Sea Lord, Sir Henry Leach, visited me in my brigade headquarters before Christmas and said that because of the withdrawal of the amphibious ships, there would never be another assault amphibious landing again, ever. And he was looking quite sort of strained after his various battles with Mr. Knott, who he didn't get on with. And so we all went off at the beginning of 1982 to our various things. 4 Fire Commando did mountain training in Scotland. 40 Commando did something else. In those days, they weren't winter trained. They did individual training. And we then spent the next 2.5 months off and on in Norway. And I ended up that Norway period as the chief umpire on the NATO exercise. The chief blue umpire.
Who was involved in the NATO exercise?
The NATO exercise involved 42 Commando, the Dutch on one side with some Americans, and it was Brigade North on the other side, I think. It was the old sort of mix, you know.
The usual suspects.
The usual suspects. Mm. And I remember one particular moment on that exercise when Brigade North were doing one of their great advances across the mountains to demonstrate their mobility, and they were going to quite clearly come down off the hills into this valley a particular way, and I wasn't commanding the brigade, all my people were under command of a particularly ineffective American brigade commander who irritated me, and I was irritated having my men under his command. Mm. And I was the chief umpire of this lot, and I saw where he'd planted the Dutch battalion, which was on the sort of top of a flat, typical Norwegian high plateau valley before it comes down into the woods. And so I went to the CEO of the Norwegian battalion, and who actually wasn't the CEO, he was the 2IC, the CEO was ill. I think he'd had tactical illness, because he was one of these chaps who decided that he wasn't going to be on this exercise because he might do badly, which would get in the way of his eventual progression to what he became, which was the CDS of the Dutch forces. And I said, "Who told you to go here?" So he said, "This American." I said, "Well, I can tell you now, that's the wrong place to be. Mm. You should be off the slope, in a reverse slope, in among the trees where you'll have cover. And you can catch these guys, and they come over the, and as they come down through the trees, you'll carve them up." And he said, "Well, I've been told to be here." I said, "Right, I'm now taking off my umpire's hat and I'm putting on my brigade commander's hat, mm. and I'm telling you, you are to withdraw your battalion back into the trees." I didn't want them to be taught bad lessons. Mm. So I exceeded my authority, made him do that, which worked. But it was an irritating time, because one watched things happening and you couldn't do anything about it. Mm. And bad lessons being taught through bad training. And that ended in sort of March, and we all then got ready to go off and do other things. And the next thing I had to do was to go and do a recce of an exercise in the Jutland Peninsula, Denmark.
Had you been to Denmark before?
Yes, I had. Mm. I hadn't been to the Jutland Peninsula before, but anyway, while we were there, there'd been this business of the scrap merchants, you know, landing in South Georgia. And while we were there, someone rang me up and said, there seems to be a lot of flap on. Mm. But I shouldn't worry because no one's going to do anything about it.
Mm. Had you, at any stage, ever suspected that there might be serious trouble in the South Atlantic or that you might be
involved? I thought there might be serious trouble in the South Atlantic, but it never occurred to me we'd be involved in it. Mm. Because, to a degree, we'd sort of brainwashed ourselves into believing that A, it's not what Britain did these days, B, we'd been told there weren't going to be any more salt landings, and the Knot review had sort of underlined the lack of amphibious capability. Mm. Incidentally, on that subject, Knot, I'd forgotten to cover one thing. One other thing we did before Christmas was my logistic regiment was doing a what can only describe as a sort of ship-to-shore movement exercise, moving kit ashore in the Solent off of some ranges called Brown Down, which are on the opposite the Isle of Wight on to the west of Southampton. And somebody said that the Secretary of State wanted to witness this exercise. And he'd actually been put up to it by an MP who was also a Royal Marine Reservist called David Trippier, who sensed that the trick was to get Knot to watch one of these exercises. Anyway, he came to watch this exercise, and I and Mike Clapp went to be there to make certain that we took charge of him. And an admiral also turned up who nearly threw the whole thing by waffling too much and talking a load of rubbish. And eventually Knot got fed up with this admiral and said to me, I want to go and look at something without this man. So I said, well, I'll take you down to the tank deck and you can watch the landing craft. And we stood on the apron of the LPD watching the landing craft coming in and out. And he turned to me and said, I didn't know we had ships like this in the Navy. And when he got back to Whitehall, he cancelled the plans to scrap the ships.
Did he?
Yeah. Mm. Or sell them.
Mm. Sell them, probably.
Probably. But, I mean, though the hold was put on doing that, of course, they eventually were going to give them away anyway until the Falklands War stopped them. So that was quite a significant thing, that. Anyway, our mindset, to come back to our mindset in sort of towards the end of March 82, was that there would be no reaction. If the Argentines invaded the Falkland Islands, everyone would just say, thank God we got rid of them. Mm. That's it, end of story.
What did the commando brigade think it was going to do if amphibious operations came to an end?
Very good question. I have no idea. Mm. I mean, I think it probably would have been meant the end of the commando brigade eventually. Mm. I think to begin with, there would have been some sort of, you know, sort of halfway tactic, which would have been taking them there by train or to Norway or
train.
Well, I'm joking,
yes.
But you know. That we would have used
North Sea ferries.
Sea ferries or something. Mm. And we wouldn't have done amphibious operation, but we'd have done an administrative landing to prevent the Russians from invading North Norway or Denmark
that
or whatever.
That would involve effectively landing support somewhere in South or Central Norway and then moving by MT or coastal steamer or
exactly. So it would have been the end really. Mm. And I think the writing was on the wall. Though we were desperately trying to work out ways of getting there, there effectively wasn't a way of getting there. Yeah. Anyway, I was on this recce with my staff, and I had to come home early because I was going to brief somebody, I can't remember who it was, on the Friday. This is now the Wednesday. When I arrived back, most of my staff were still in Denmark, putting finishing touches to the work along with the Americans. And one of the remaining staff officers who had been left behind, the G3 training, using that parlance, Hector Gullen of the Parachute Regiment, SAS and Parachute Regiment, who was attached to my staff, came to see me and said, we've been on a flap because of this job, but we've been stood down. Yeah. There's no requirement for the commando brigade, whatever happens. So, that's what I thought, until I was rung up at 03 or something in the morning of the 2nd of April to be told by Jeremy Moore, you know those people down south, they're about to be invaded, because they hadn't actually invaded them at that stage. This was still the 1st of April in the South Atlantic, across the other side. You ought to bring your brigade 72 hours notice, embark and sail south. Well, the first thought that went through my head was, my staff are all sitting in Denmark. One commando's on leave. One's about to go on leave. One of them's got a company in Brunei doing jungle training. And we're at 7 days' notice. And we've got a load on Monday. It's now Friday. So...
What are your priorities then? What do you
well, my priority was to get
what
my...
Order,
my what I My first priority was to alert the two remaining staff officers in England to get into headquarters ASP now. And also to warn everybody else. Now, this is one of the reasons that commando forces were quite useful, because most of my guys were sitting in Denmark, but I could say to commando forces, will you now alert all my units
yes.
to come to short notice and start moving. And I, my normal DQ, my normal logistician, who'd just taken over, was sitting in Denmark with the rest. But my ex-DQ, who hadn't gone to a new job, was sitting having leave in his house in Devon. So I said, come back in, scrap your leave, you're back in now, you can come in and start helping us plan. So I moved my headquarters, rather than sit in an empty headquarters without a staff, I moved the bits I had up to the Commando Forces headquarters at Hamo's house, which meant that I took over some rooms there, including the ballroom, which meant that I was alongside the headquarters that was receiving all the news down the chain of command, so I could actually get it word of mouth from their staff all the time, rather than sitting a mile away getting it by phone and signal and so on. And I could also get decisions out of them quickly. And we sat down, the three of us, and I was in that unenviable position of a commander without a chief of staff. And so instead of being like the DS at the staff college, or Sandhurst or whatever, who says to his merry braves, this is the problem, I'll be back in an hour and a half and you can tell me what the solution is, I was the guy having to provide the solution. And of course there wasn't a contingency plan. There was no contingency plan for the Falklands at all. So we were starting with blank sheets of paper.
Was there sufficient geographical intelligence?
There wasn't much at the time, no. Not at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning on Friday the 2nd of April, no. But what was most critical was there was no contingency plan. There was nothing you could...
No time.
There was no line which you could say you need this, this, this and this. So what we did was we took the plan for the reinforcement of North Norway and used that as the baseline on which to plan what we were going to need in the way of shipping. Because when I was told by the general, load into ships, I had to find out, what did I need? What shipping did I need?
How many ships and what sort?
Yep, that was the first thing.
And could you be sure that they would be available?
Well, the answer is no. As it turned out, no. So the first day was spent drawing up a list of shipping, and at the same time I was being reinforced. So I suddenly found that I had Hugh Pike's battalion added to the Orbat, because he was the spearhead battalion. Another battery of artillery. So it was being added up. So all the time you were working to what was fast becoming a completely out of date baseline, because it was not based on what we were actually having to do. At the same time, they were trying to persuade the headquarters, the fleet headquarters at Northwood, who were the ship providers, that you needed more ships than were in the plan for the reinforcement of Norway.
Because you were taking the
Because you were taking more people.
Mm. Also, wouldn't it be the case that you were having to operate over a longer distance, therefore you would need more
supplies? You needed to take the whole of your war maintenance reserve with you.
Yes.
So 9,000 tons. Mm. And they Northwood at the time had one Royal Marine officer on the staff who was the security officer. He had no planning responsibility at all. The headquarters at Northwood had one role, and that one only, and that was to run the Eastern Atlantic battle for the reinforcement of NATO. That was it. So that's how they were staffed. They weren't there to run an amphibious operation. So they knew absolutely nothing about amphibious operations. Nothing. So when you said to them, we need this, this and this, they then looked up the number of ships you'd used on the last exercise in Norway. They said, why do you need three times as many ships? And you had to say, well, we're taking three times as many people. Plus, when we went on the exercise in Norway last year, we didn't take 9,000 tons of ammunition, mines, barbed wire, etc. That's why we need it. And we took quite a long time to get this into their heads, actually. Anyway, to my vast relief, that afternoon and evening, my staff appeared, having bullied and fought and cajoled their way onto every aeroplane they possibly could. They appeared back in Plymouth, which meant that I could now sort of start thinking bigger than being just a brigade major, which is what I'd reverted to, had to, and could start thinking through some of the problems. And while they got on with the groundwork.
What happened about the commando that was on leave?
Well, they were all recalled.
Yeah. Did that work effectively?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a chap, they were spread all over the world. There was a chap in New York on his wedding. The chaps coming back from the jungle were on their way back already. People who hadn't gone on leave, they stopped their leave. So, actually, people were back very quickly with sort of notices, traditional notices on railway stations,
yes.
You name it.
There was a broadcast, wasn't there?
Broadcast, everything, get back. And so everyone returned. The next problem was getting the logistic problem was getting the 9,000 tons of war maintenance reserve outloaded from the depots and loaded into ships. Mm. And because it was now, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it was deemed that British Rail, as they were called then, we're not going to hack the problem. So every RCT TA regiment in the United Kingdom was turned out, and their trucks moved it very efficiently too. But because of the shortage of time, for example, if you wanted to load the ammunition into a particular ship, that particular ship might be still at sea, there had been requisition, but there was another ship in, say, Avonmouth. But it might not be the right ship, but it was a ship. So you took all the ammunition from Bramley, or Didcot, or wherever it was, and you took it to Avonmouth. Oh. And you just loaded it, and you just tipped the whole lot in.
So you're loading any old how?
Any old how. Mm. No combat loading, just get it done. Because we were told the force had to sail after the weekend, as an political intent. That was it. So to stuff the problem about whether it was all in the wrong ship, just get it loaded. So that had to happen. Sorry, do you want to end now before we get into the Falklands into mega or what? Are you sort of wondering about your own timing?
We're just coming to the end of the real.